Hello, and welcome to Watch the Throne. Oh, what a lovely day. This is episode 53, Bombshell, from 2019. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, before we introduce our very special guest, this is a live episode. Now that we are, aside from the Tom Tom Club, we're trying to do everything in person now because the weather is cold. We need to warm each other with friendship. We need to warm each other with movies about sexual assault and harassment because there's nothing that warms the heart quite like taking down the patriarchy. We have two Charlize movies this year. We skipped the Addams Family because we just weren't good at it.
Well, that was before we decided we're going to review them while they're in theaters. Like, we decided with this movie, let's go see Bombshell and review it immediately instead of waiting for DVD.
I think we should start doing for everything, which I think is our plan. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of people clamoring for the Addams Family. I feel like this is a more buzzy movie.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make that I keep derailing myself is that we had Flarsky, which became Longshot.
Yes.
We had Fair and Balanced, which became Bombshell.
Oh.
Charlize keeps having movies renamed to worse
names? Titles? I think so.
Flarsky's the best name.
Flarsky should be every movie's working title.
This was originally going to be an Annapurna. I don't know if you remember this. It was originally going to be an Annapurna movie, and then they dropped out like 3 days before it started shooting. But Megan Allison is still a producer on this movie. I don't know if she still had, I don't know if it was prep. I don't know exactly her role, but the head of Annapurna is, I saw her name. I was like, oh, but I didn't see the,
I wonder what happened there.
But with us tonight to talk about Bombshell, the final Charlize Theron movie of 2019, we have, of the Wistful Thinking podcast, Kara Gail O'Regan. Hello, Kara.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us on this very chilly evening to talk about Bombshell.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you saw the movie yesterday.
I did.
Mike and I just got back from the theater. We went theater, diner, here.
Yep.
Well, we went cats, Bombshell, diner, here. Jellicle cats. Jellicle cats.
Meow.
Jellicle cats. Jellicle cats.
Yes.
So Bombshell, the big thing I think I want to talk about first is the makeup.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because what I heard recently was Megyn Kelly, her children said, wait, so who's your twin? Like, they thought it was, there was, I might have just make a cutesy headline that might not have been the actual quote.
She posted about it on Instagram.
Megyn Kelly did.
Yes. She posted about it on Instagram, like a photograph of her, one of her small children looking up at the movie poster. They went to see Frozen 2, I guess. And they saw the poster and was like, Mommy, why are you on that poster?
That's got to be weird.
Yeah.
I looked on the IMDb trivia for this movie and there's like basically nothing of merit. Because it's not old enough for people to actually have done like research. Like, there's stuff that's out
it's
there,
very
but IMDb
current
is
event.
Not.
Yes. This is a super current event, yeah.
But here's what I found, an article. So Charlize Theron's makeup was done by Vivian Baker. Took 3 hours each day, 8 pieces of prosthetics created by special makeup effects and visual artist Kazuhiro Tsuji. He did the Gary Oldman's The Winston Churchill for Darkest Hour and Joseph Gordon-Levitt for Looper, turning him into Bruce Willis. So he's won Academy Awards for Best Makeup before. It's striking because, like, when we saw the trailer, and I think when the trailer came out, you were like, I need to be on this episode.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, where's Charlize? Like, I don't understand.
It's uncanny.
Mike and I have watched all 53 of her movies now or whatever, 51, 52 of her movies, and it does not look like her.
No.
And it doesn't really, it sounds like her, but also not really.
She's doing a great accent. Like, the whole package is there. Like, you know, I guess they could have done it just with the accent, but the makeup is just, like, sells it so hard. Like, that's the whole combo. And I leaned over to Joey one time. I was like, do you think that's digital? Is this, like, the Irishman
the makeup,
dealing with?
The
kind
makeup
of
across
stuff?
The board is crazy.
Like, it's insane.
Like, Richard Kind to Rudy Giuliani is
oh
a whole
my goodness.
Thing.
The whole theater, like, lost their minds when he showed up.
Who played Bill O'Reilly? Because that wasn't Bill O'Reilly, but
no,
it looked like Bill O'Reilly.
No, look-alike.
It looked like Bob Odenkirk, but it couldn't possibly have been him.
That's actually not a bad call.
Yeah, I could actually see that working,
though. I don't know, there's
working,
so many random people
because he
this movie.
Played the president in Longshot, so there was a Charlize connection there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There was also a Geraldo Rivera look-alike, which
is uncanny.
Like,
I pulled up next to him on like Fifth Avenue one day, and he really does look like that.
Yeah,
He drives a Bentley in New York City?
Mm-hmm. That's mustache money, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's that, and it's littered with great character actors. Like, Joey and I kept leaning over going like, hey, it's this person, it's this person, that person's there.
Kevin Dorff played Bill O'Reilly, and Kevin Dorff, you might know him as just a guy who looks like Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah,
no
okay.
kidding.
Because, like, look at that picture. Like, that's basically 80% of the way there already.
With a prosthetic nose, for sure.
Mark Evan Jackson played Chris Wallace. I didn't even recognize him. Jennifer Morrison, I knew from Juliet Huddy.
Charlize is like
Alice
the,
Eve.
The only that's who I was trying to explain on the way out. That Alice
from
Eve
Star
was,
Trek.
Into Darkness. The only guy on in Megyn Kelly's team.
Rob Delaney.
Yeah, Rob Delaney.
Catastrophe.
Yeah,
and from Twitter. Mostly from Twitter.
Mostly from Twitter.
Originally from Twitter.
I know him from Deadpool 2. Like, yeah, and John Lithgow's like makeup and everything like that.
He got Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman in terms of the just like, let's put on a lot of weight on this guy and make him look like an old balding man.
Yeah, none of them did the Christian Bale route.
We're trying to figure out, like, this is a movie that even if you don't see it, you know what it is. This is a movie, I think, that isn't necessarily going to change people's minds, because, like, my dad, for instance, is not going to see this movie.
Yeah, I was thinking that the whole time I was watching it, like, who is this for? Like,
exactly.
That's exactly what Joey said.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Our takeaway is that if this makes even one woman speak up, it's worth it?
Sure.
I felt like it was diluted by also being about Fox News and the political, and the election and all that kind of stuff, too. Like, it felt, like, diluted and watered down, and, like, if we had just gotten the movie about workplace sexual harassment, I think it would have worked a lot better outside of the political context. Not that it doesn't also still work. Yeah. I just got a little tripped up personally because of my politics that, like, when I start talking about Trump, I just tune out. When I start talking about Fox, I tune out a lot of that stuff. So, like, you know, I don't want to rob the film from its message or anything. So I just felt like, oh, that sort of took me off track. I wish it was just an imaginary, not imaginary, but just like, I don't know. I just wish maybe they took another current event.
Especially because it's so recent history. I mean, it's, you know, this happened a couple of years ago. This is a movie that was written, directed, mostly produced, edited, shot by men,
which
I found really interesting.
Also, this is another one of those, like, the Joker movies where it's, like, mostly comedy guys, let's go prestige now.
Yeah.
Like, why is this the project that you want to do?
Fine, whatever. To your point about, like, getting tripped up with the politics, I definitely understand where you're coming from on that, but, like, speaking as a woman who's had to live through all of this, it's inextricable.
Right, you can't separate it.
You can't separate it. Yeah. I mean, especially when it's a story about these people who are so inextricably linked to this person who's doing stuff. No, I think the Trump thing is you can't take that out of this, but this is a case of something that we talk about a lot on Wistful Thinking of this movie is about the wrong person, because it like it should be about Gretchen Carlson. Like, she
disappears.
That's right.
She was the catalyst for all of this. And, like, just contextually, this happened at a time before the Weinstein revelations, before so much of, like, before the Kavanaugh hearing, you know, like
before Me Too, right?
Like, yeah, it's
right
really, at the really was. So as difficult as it is for me to divorce my personal politics and feelings about these people who participated in this machine that clearly is ruining the country, I think that Gretchen Carlson was, like, so brave, and, like, she did it so well. Like, she had receipts. She taped those conversations. She kept records of everything. Yeah. And also, she didn't just, like, run off and get a show on a different network. Like, she has been working to change laws around non-disclosure agreements and around, like, forced arbitration in contracts and stuff. Things that have stood in the way of people being able to come forward about this in the past. So she's the one who's, like, really done the work, and I think is kind of the most compelling character in this story. And yet, the movie's not about her. It's about somebody else.
Well, what's weird about the trailer is that there's the Charlize Theron line early in the movie, which I didn't realize was going to be early in the movie. She's like, am I the story? I'm going to be the story. And they think it's about this, but it's not about this. It's about something else.
Right.
The trailer's setting you up for that, but then it comes early. It's like, wait, is this...
Well, that's the thing. I thought the movie was super misleading to begin with because, like, look, I don't watch Fox News. I'm barely up on, like, the news as it is, you know, because I choose not to be exactly. And I knew shit went down and Roger Ailes was out and he was a sexual predator and this and that, but I didn't know the detail, right? So, like, I, coming into this movie, didn't know what Charlize's, like, role was exactly. So when she did take over the film, I was like, wait a minute, why is this happening all of a sudden? Like, it's not her story, but they sort of make it her story. I mean, it is her story.
And ultimately, she was the story.
Yeah.
Like, the Gretchen Carlson thing didn't get nearly as much play. And again, it's inextricably linked to Trump. It's because of this, like, insane feedback loop that goes on over there. And not just at Fox News, but at all of the cable news networks, you know.
Like, I was telling Joey, like, this felt to me like a horror movie, you know?
It's definitely a horror movie. Yes. I know I say that everything is a horror movie, but this is definitely a horror movie. There's even a jump scare.
Yeah. I for real like felt that this time too. So like not just like with this movie, but what did I watch the other day too with Adam Sandler movie too? Like
Uncut
that
Gems.
Definitely felt like a horror movie too.
What do you make of the fact that the Margot Robbie character is not a real person? She's just like a combination of.
I could not care less.
Yeah.
It's like whatever, you know. Because obviously,
her experience has happened. It's just not to one person.
Sure, and it's a lot easier to make a composite character than to adapt, because we don't know what happened there.
Right.
Megyn Kelly had nothing to do with this movie.
Which they point out outside. You know, with the making of Bombshell.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And I don't think Gretchen Carlson had anything to do with it. Like, again, this is all, you know, put through the lens of so many men that, like, these characters are clear. This is not obviously, like, what actually happened. This
right.
is all kind of a construction of what could have potentially maybe have happened.
Which they kind of try to disclaim a little bit with that opening text even before the title card.
I don't know. So,
Tara is making a pain face right now.
It's kind of a mess. Like, stylistically speaking.
Oh, there's the one phone call.
Great shot.
From roof to roof. And Mike's just like, what the fuck is going on right now?
The style choices that are made, like, at the beginning, they're doing this kind of, like, presentational Megyn Kelly thing.
Walk
where
and
she's
talk
like,
to you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which I was like, okay, this is not the choice that I personally would have made, but it's a choice. And, you know, this could be an interesting way to tell this story. Do it almost like Megyn Kelly is doing an expose on this thing or whatever. And then they don't stick to that at all.
No. Yeah.
And then in other points in the movie, like, you're hearing people's thoughts, which also could have been a really interesting device for the movie.
Yeah.
To like examine the calculus that women are like kind of constantly doing in their heads, but they don't stick with that. Like, that's not used consistently at all.
I feel like it's like the big shortification of movies.
Yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
How do we make this relatable? Like, it's a thing that people know about but don't know about.
Yeah.
And how do we break it down to them? Both starring Margot Robbie.
It's interesting, too, because they make such a point of putting up, like, dates and names and times and things like that. And I never paid attention to any of that stuff. I just figured we were going mostly in chronological order. And, like, okay, all I needed to know is that's their lawyer. I didn't necessarily need to know their name. But I guess that's if you've been following the story
right.
and you know who you're looking at.
Yeah,
and
it helps to know, like, the real people, who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I enjoyed when it came down to, like, the Fox News personalities, like, being able to, like, recognize them if I didn't, like, you know, recognize them immediately
right.
visually.
Because that's, like, the other real big takeaway is that there's a recognizability factor to this movie, both of the people that are mm-hmm. portraying and the people who are portraying them.
Mm.
Like, there are so many people that, like Mike was saying earlier, like, John Gabris has a line in this movie. Lennon Parham has two lines in this movie. Connie Britton has, like, barely anything to do, and she's amazing. Like, why are you giving her, like, just
always
this thankless
role? Always has
the
prettiest hair.
Stephen Root's in, like, one scene as one of the lawyers.
Allison Janney's in a little bit.
Yeah.
Malcolm McDowell shows up for 3 minutes at the end. It's like, what is going on? I guess it's cool that everybody wanted to be involved, and
I guess
it's cool that, like, oh, there's, you know, Hannity and Colmes and Cavuto and, you
well,
know, everybody just
thing.
Talking to each other. But it's like, is this just for cool factor?
Yeah,
I don't know. That's the thing that I thought it would be more, not like a farce, but I thought they'd be taking the piss out of it more, like, make it funnier. And I don't think that they should have now that I think back, because it's not a funny issue or anything like that. But, like, it just seemed like as it was starting, like you said, with the walk and talk and with all these familiar faces and stuff, that they were trying to, like, put a comical spin on it, but they didn't.
I think it's because it's a comedy director who's like, can't help but, like, have certain things bleed through into.
Yeah,
because that definitely started getting distracting for me, whereas, like, I can't find the tone yet. Like, I don't think I ever necessarily
it never settles
found
on.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the major issues. He just couldn't tonally lay it down.
Like, everyone in the movie is doing amazing work, but, like, as a cohesive unit doesn't really track very well. Which I think is unfortunate.
Yeah, and, you know, the more I think about it is, like, this movie definitely made me uncomfortable, and I think that's in a good way for good reasons and things like that, too, you know, for exposing me to just everything that went on. Like, I just was not following the news, so I didn't know any of that kind of shit, and I just always thought everyone at Fox News deserved
what asshole,
everyone's
so,
an
yeah.
asshole, deserve what you get, whatever, in this shit, but that's just not true. Like, you just can't think like that, and, like, sure enough, like, yeah, it's just crazy. Like, it made me just empathize really hard.
Well, sure. The power of narrative storytelling.
I mean, to bring it to the format of our newer podcast, is there something about this movie or the way that they tell the story that stood out above the rest as the best or your favorite part of this movie? Like, what about this movie? I know that we're all kind of, like, lukewarm-ish on it. Like, it's not poorly... I don't think it's poorly made. Like, I think... Compare this in a way, and it's not at all the same, but also similar to, like, Vice. And I think Vice is, like, an objectively bad movie.
Yeah, that one's also a mess. I thought they were pretty. The performances in this one are better, but like from like a filmmaking perspective, they're kind of like on the same level.
Is there something about this movie that stood out as great? Is there, I mean, aside from, I guess, the performances or whatever, that could also be the answer. But is it, what would be your favorite part if you had to pick a favorite part of a movie like Bombshell?
It's tough.
Because it's all over the place. It's almost the same length as Cats, and they both feel like 3 hours long.
It did feel very long.
I mean, the makeup and the acting and the portrayal of the actual people, like, all that was spot on.
When Megyn Kelly, I think, is, like, first touring the newsroom, and she points out that, like, some viewers send in some fan art.
Oh, yeah.
And there's
some
fan art of Sean Hannity that made me make a very loud noise in the theater.
There is a shot where Mark Duplass and Charlize are going into the Holland Tunnel into Jersey and they're in the car, and there are like 9 different camera angles, and it's like, how have you never known there's like back rear, forward side, forward front of like all of them? It's like, what?
Can I ask like who stages a scene that takes place getting into the Holland Tunnel stuck in traffic in the first place?
Like, I think it's the perfect place to have like an existential discussion, which they kind of are, which is like, I don't remember exactly what they're talking about, but it's basically like,
it's around the time where I think she's basically like, should I do this kind
right
of.
You know, it's like, and it's like hesitancy, you're stuck in traffic, you're about to enter this dark tunnel.
Oh, okay.
I think symbolically it works.
How do I see that,
even if it's not the most visually
my mind was visually assaulted like 2 hours earlier by a bunch of dancing cats, so my mind was a little busted.
Something else that I found interesting about this movie, I don't know if I liked it about this movie, but earlier in the week I saw the new Black Christmas, which I loved and Joey hated.
I didn't hate, I just didn't like anything about.
Oh, okay, sure.
There's a difference.
No, like, it's not a movie that I like. There are movies that I hate Joker. Like, okay. There are movies that I hate. This, I'm mostly indifferent to. I'm just like, there's not, like, I love Imogen Poots. I love the director, Sofia Tikal. To your point, it's not for me, and it's also like, I don't enjoy it, but like, I don't hate it. Like, there are very few movies that I hate. Cats is not one of them. Cats is, it exists beyond living.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a different thing.
But it is a weird, not a weird, coincidental maybe, to have two wildly different movies that also wind up being very similar.
Yeah, not the same movie, but they're about the same thing. And I it was interesting having seen that and then like going in to watch Bombshell and just having the two to think about, because they're both about the patriarchy and toxic masculinity, but like more importantly about like women's complicity within that system and solidarity or lack thereof.
See, that's the stuff that got me the most, I think, in this movie, was because it's something that I picked up a lot in Midsommar, like it's my favorite movie of the year, and in that movie,
copycat, but
in that movie, you know, the female lead,
Florence Pugh,
basically every time she opens her mouth, the first words out of her mouth are, I'm sorry, right? She's like constantly pre-apologizing for all of her actions and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that really like makes my gut wrench and stuff. And like that was happening in this movie, and it was like a culture.
I didn't even notice it.
Yeah. So like there was the thing, like there was one moment when Roger Ailes is like being like all like all lecherous and stuff, or maybe it's not Roger, but she's doing an interview and she's
when she's getting called to DC. It's the scene that Kara was talking about.
Okay,
before.
Yeah, and in her head she's saying like, make it about yourself, like apologize. Yeah.
Sorry if I did anything to misled you.
And those are the strongest moments.
But even
for me,
with Roger Ailes, when Connie Britton apologizes, like, oh, I shouldn't let him get away with this at home. Like, it's my don't blame him, blame me. It's like, what?
yeah.
One thing I do love about this movie that we have not talked yet, we have not mentioned her name, but Kate McKinnon. God damn.
Oh my god.
Really? I don't know. I found her a little distracting because she's like...
But is she a real person?
No, she's also like a composite character.
Because I'm sure that there are, for lack of a better word, like moles living within Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
That they address openly, like, why do people work here? It's like, well, I tried to get a job literally anywhere else, but I couldn't.
And now I can't get one anywhere else.
I actually know somebody that happened to, like, around the time of the recession.
Well, it's not quite this, but when he was in high school or college, Larson covered the Republican National Convention in Minnesota because he knew that everyone in his very liberal high school was going to apply to the Democratic Convention. And he wanted to do one of them, and he realized he could just do the one and like basically get selected to that. So like, it's not taking a job there, but it's like, oh yeah, like this is the one that will have me.
Right.
Which I think is just kind of a funny little weird anecdote.
It's interesting that the two amalgam characters ended up together in a way, like sitting across from each other, talking, like having their whole...
And in bed together, more importantly.
Did they have sex?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What?
Felt like it was kind of a let's get Margot Robbie in a bra scene, but it's also like they're very close and cutesy, but they're never affectionate on screen. Well, like, it's either pre or post, and it wasn't. Yeah.
But what
maybe,
I liked about I like kind of like
it was heavily
that.
Implied, but it wasn't like explicitly.
Right.
Well, I kind of like that. Why does it have to be titillating?
Right. This is right? A movie about.
Why would Margot Robbie in a bra otherwise?
Well, it's directed by a guy. I don't know what else to tell you, but I mean, like, it's the same
there's
reason.
There's a difference between like having a woman in her underwear on screen and like shooting it in a way truly objectivize her on the screen versus, you know, just like.
Did you think anything in this movie was shot in a way that objectified the women?
Yes, but like on purpose.
Like the hike up your dress scene?
Yeah.
Well, there's also the scene I felt like when they're all changing backstage mm-hmm. and you see that like there's only like two rows of dresses and they're right. putting all the mutton chops in or whatever, the cutlets.
Which I think is still part of the like documentary part of it.
Yeah.
Right? She's like walking through.
Or it comes
it
back
else?
A little, I think, at the end, towards the end when things are wrapping up a little bit.
Yeah.
One of the issues the movie has is that there's a lot of things that are set up and not paid off, but they're not even set up to be paid off. They're just right. like set up. Like they
and
go
left.
On vacation
yeah.
and then like, you know, Charlize says after Mark Duplass defends her honor at tennis, she's like, you're gonna get some action. Then it's like post-coital, and then the kid's like, Daddy, what were you doing? And it's like, well, why is that? Like, is that a joke?
What is
and
that?
Then there's the photographer, but that doesn't, I guess that's just like another omnipresent threat, but it's like all these like little things.
Well, there's also, she's like, I need security detail, and you never see,
no.
like, you just assume she gets it, but you don't see it.
I mean, that's the other thing, is that the amount of harassment that these women received after coming forward is truly bone chilling.
Yeah.
They're not alone. Obviously, this is the thing that happens to women when they come forward. Like, Christine Blasey Ford, the woman who testified in Congress during the Kavanaugh hearings, like, has had to continually move ever since because, like, she's getting death threats and getting targeted for violence. So, yeah, that's a really big aspect of these cases that, like, wasn't fully given serious weight in the movie in the way that it should have been.
Yeah, it wasn't really realized. There's one scene where, they're like, here's all the hate mail. And she's like, well, are you going to do anything about this to make it stop? And she's like, this is the most write-in mail we've ever gotten. And she's like, yeah, but it's all negative. And they're like, yeah, but it's reaction. It's like, we're, you know, mm-hmm. it proves people are why we don't care. We're getting responses. And it's like, oh, so toxic.
What I think is weird about this movie, whenever someone's story, for lack of a better word, is like heating up, they just cut away, like mm-hmm. to your Gretchen Carlson point. But then again, to the Charlize, when like Megyn Kelly, like there's like, oh, we need security. It's like, okay, now it's Margot Robbie's movie. It's like, no, like it's getting interesting now. Like, why don't we, like, why don't we either like jump ahead and like show the next part or like just stay on that person? Like, it's weird. Like, I get that there's like the three different sort of almost like the ghost of past, present, and future mm-hmm. sort of, which I like that element of it, but I feel like the scenes they choose to show are almost like they're the setup without the pay. I mean, you get the ultimate payoff, but also you don't.
It could be, again, kind of a conceptual thing that, like, this is something that happens repeatedly, and, like, women get to a point at Fox News and they either have to shit or get off the pot, you know, to give ahead, get something.
Get ahead, get
thank
some
you. Head. I couldn't remember. I was like, I don't know, there's head involved in somewhere. And this, you know, again, is something that happens to women in their careers, that they can progress to a certain point and then glass ceiling, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So
now, on the flip side of the coin, what about this movie stands out as, like, the worst part or your least favorite part? Like, what about this rubbed you the wrong way? Is there something that you think that you could have changed or fixed or swapped out that would have instantly made it
just, like,
better?
Make a choice and stick to it.
Yeah.
Like, just go with one of these things, maybe even two. You know, but not 900 and only for 10 minutes each. It just was kind of incoherent because of it. And I think that the stories get lost because of that.
I totally agree. Like, I think the Megyn Kelly stuff isn't even the most interesting stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I want Gretchen Carlson story to be the whole movie. Mm-hmm. That's what had like traction. That's what had drama. And like, I really kind of felt like the Charlize stuff was just like bouncing around conventions and going to work. I mean, like, I was more riveted with the other stuff. When we got to the Megyn Kelly stuff, it just felt very sort of rote and by the book. And, you know, it's still okay and everything, but I just wish it was, more focused on one than the other, definitely. And focused on the right person.
It just feels, like, aimless in a way that it shouldn't be aimless. Like, there's a very specific aim and a very, like, you literally, you're not making up, like, you're crafting a narrative, but you're not making up a story. Like, the story's been told.
Yeah, there's lots of targets. You
know,
can see them all.
You can,
You know what the story is.
You can map out, like, from A to B to C, and it's just like, all right, but we're going to, like, detour all the way around here because We got a cameo, like, liberals are the only people who eat sushi, so, like, let's take a shot at sushi. Like, it's just, like, I appreciate that Lennon Parham's in the movie, but, like, still, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Charlize came forward, I think, last year about how she was harassed.
No, she came forward a long time ago. So, actually, yeah, so she was on Fresh Air with Terry Gross on NPR this week. Great interview. She talked a lot about preparing for this part, how she actually strained her voice and, like, lost her voice for a few weeks, just in preparing for the movie and training her voice to speak in the lower register. And then she also talked about, like, wearing the prosthetic makeup pieces and, like, what they did to her face, which I found really interesting. Terry Gross was asking her about her own experiences with harassment in the workplace, noted that she had previously talked about on her very first audition, she went to a director's hotel room and she was like, I guess this is just how they do, you know, the whole story, right, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had told that reporter who it was, and the reporter chose not to disclose that person's name. And this was like years ago. So then when like the Weinstein revelations happened, she like went back and looked for the story, and it was everywhere. But the guy's name never came up. So she said that, like, eventually she will disclose whose name it is, but she doesn't want to do it while she's promoting this movie because that becomes the story.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Do you think that might be one of the causes that she even took the role? Because.
Yes.
I'm sorry for being so ignorant, but I'm just saying, no, because sometimes you want to confront that stuff and sometimes you don't. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying, like, I think that's a very brave move and a bold thing. And when you can actually process something like that through art and come out the other end, and yeah, you know, like, I think that's great.
Like, there are a lot of people who are working on movies about this stuff right now. Like, obviously, Black Christmas is...
I think there's a TV series about this, too. Like, about the Fox and, like, the rise and fall of Fox News.
Is that the loudest voice in the room?
I think so.
Okay, so Naomi Watts plays Gretchen Carlson in that one. And she and Nicole Kidman are, like, really good friends.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
They both
played
the same character. People are finally making movies and TV shows about these stories, but every woman has experience with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just because we and also, I mean, the thing with like horror movies particularly is that like so many of them center violence, so often like sexual violence against women, and so many of them are told through a male perspective. You know, so it's like when it finally comes around that like women are telling a story about this, I think it's interesting. I think it's also interesting Nicole Kidman continues to make these kinds of
like Destroyer
movies.
And stuff,
and she also was on Big Little Lies.
That's true.
A whole thing that they were gonna have this woman director, and then the whole project was kind of like taken away from her, and you know, so I
why
think
hire Andrea Arnold if you're not gonna let her do her thing?
What I don't understand is like why anyone in 2018 2019 are making movies about women's stories and putting men in charge of them. Like, it just doesn't. It, like, to me is truly insane. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense.
It's funny because I say I'm tired of watching stories about guys told by guys. Like, I want to see it through a female lens more. Like, that's why Point Break is one of the
greatest. Which I just watched today.
One of the greatest action movies ever.
Good.
Directed by a
woman.
Is it
my favorite movie? It might be.
See, you also look at, like, other films Bigelow did, like The Hurt Locker. That movie's amazing. And it's, like, one of the raw, grittiest, toughest movies. You would assume that, you know, a guy directed that,
right? Dark 30?
Exactly, yeah. So, like, I am also kind of tired of just the man telling the man story, too. Yeah. I need a whole other perspective.
Well, so this year, I set out to watch a bunch of movies made by women, because I'm like, they're different, and I don't know why exactly, but, like, it matters somehow. And I watched 81 of them so far.
Wow.
And I still can't articulate why it matters, what the difference is exactly, but there's definitely
a difference. Are they 81 directed by or written by or just...
Specifically directed by. There's plenty more that I've watched that are written by, produced by, etc. But I had to, like, you know, just, like, to make a specific list.
Yeah.
Then to, like, watch Bombshell and, like... Be like, why?
Yep.
Why
did a guy?
But not just a guy. Like, it really, like, above and below the line, like, so many men worked on this movie, and it's like, good for them. They're, you know, doing their part, maybe, but at the same time, it's just like, women can do these jobs too, and they can probably do a better job of telling this story that is specifically about women's experience from a woman's point of view.
Next year for Charlize, I don't know if any of these movies, and we could take a look, are going to be made by women, but we have The Addams Family.
Yes, I've seen it.
Directed by Not one, but two dudes.
All right.
Cool, cool, cool. We have a little movie called Fast and Furious 9, directed by a dude, but also
hell fucking, yeah, who cares?
That's beyond. She's going to be in a movie called The Old Guard, which is written, or which is at least directed by a woman, Gina Prince Blythewood. Andy, her name is Andy, leads a small group of soldiers working as mercenaries through the ages.
Interesting.
Action fantasy. And then she's going to be in Atomic Blonde 2, which is, again, made by a man, but also she's like a producer. Like she's, I think she's, to a certain extent, like very much, not in charge over there, but has a very deep role. But yeah, so there's a couple exciting things coming up on the old docket for Charlize because, I mean, Fate was not great. That's the one. We've warned you before. Wait, have you seen Fury 7 yet or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Go check out our current lap of Too Fast, Too Forever, where Kara is the guest on every episode.
I just rewatched number 4 the other day because I wanted to see it after number 3.
I think it's better the way that we did it in our order. Any other thoughts about Bombshell?
No, I'm good.
I think it's a movie worth seeing for the performances. I don't think you necessarily need to rush out and see it in theaters.
I would agree.
I think you can very easily wait for this on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is definitely going to be the movie that's on HBO all the time.
But why wasn't it just an HBO movie?
That's true.
Is my question. Interesting. Because like the scale of it feels, I mean, they like spent a shit ton of money on this, but like it feels more like a HBO movie.
I think it's going to make a decent amount of money because like our theater was pretty full today. Was yours, what was yours like yesterday?
Ours wasn't full, but I went at like 4:45 on a Friday and it was surprising. I was surprised by the number of people there.
Because like we may have mentioned that we saw Cats today too, and like there were 9 people, including us, in the theater. And then like no one was seeing Cats.
I think 2 or 3 people left. I'm not sure.
I don't want to say like the theater was full, but I say the theater was probably 2/3 full.
It was healthy.
There was pretty solid,
more than I was expecting for sure. Yeah,
well. I mean, this is obviously the weekend that Star Wars comes out, and everybody and their brother is going to see Star Wars.
Yeah, and it's also like the busiest holiday shopping day of the year.
Yeah. No one's shopping anymore.
Budget was $32 million.
You should have seen Joey's exit from the mall today. It was fucking legendary.
Oh, I forgot. You guys went to a real mall. I went to a ghost mall yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
That was the real key to getting in and out of a movie theater.
Yeah, I ended up seeing Star Wars just like down the street in town, too, so that I could actually get in, I guess. Yeah.
So this movie cost $32 million to make, which I feel like over time, which actually is kind of less
than
that's
way low.
I thought it was more than that.
Google says 32. It might not be right.
Because I at least one
to quote
thing,
the movie, is that sourced?
There's at least one thing that I read that said that like part of the reason that Annapurna dropped out was because it was getting too expensive.
Well, they're also like a tiny little shop.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was shelved for a while. Like, I think they dropped out. They're like, oh, we need to figure out like what we're doing. And I think it like went on hold for a while.
How could it have been on hold for a while? It
well, not too long.
Two
like,
years
ago. I, no, I feel like a couple months.
Like, it out for, like, 2 or 3 months.
Because we weren't even sure if the movie was still like,
happening. I remember there was a point where I was like, oh, I guess this isn't going to happen. And then
it came back as Bombshell. And like, oh, it's fair and balanced. Okay, they are making it.
Did you have any, you brought up your notes. Do you have any other notes?
Not really.
Well, we have 52, I think, other episodes of Watch the Throne, including several. What other episodes of Watch the Throne were you on?
Monster.
Charlize Theron's Academy Award winning. Do you think that she's going to get any award recognition for this, or is it?
Well, she's already been nominated for at least a Golden Globe and I think a SAG Award.
Is it for lead or supporting?
Lead.
I don't know if this is Oscar worthy necessarily.
I thought that she was incredible and that she's so good. They all were. I don't know. I don't believe in awards. I think they're all insane.
It's true.
None of them ever make sense and they don't matter.
But I guess in terms of other female leading performances, I don't know what's going to get nominated because I feel like these are all kind of fringy things. But like Florence Pugh is amazing in Midsommar. Even if you don't like the movie, I think you have to admit that her performance is...
Yeah, it's great. I don't know. I just found it so boring.
Elizabeth Moss and her smell is beyond words.
I see that. Yeah.
Little Women. We haven't seen it yet,
nope.
But obviously it's good.
Caitlin Dever and Booksmart. Oh, Jesse Buckley and Wild Rose. Holy moly. Anyway, 52 other episodes of Watch the Throne, including Monster, including some others that Kara was on. We have 26 shows here on the Podcast Network, including our newest one, which we'll have a new episode out within probably a day of this coming out. With the same voices you're hearing now, we're talking about Viva Pod Vegas. We're talking about Jailhouse Rock on our Elvis podcast. You can also check out Wistful Thinking every other Thursday. We are currently in Beach Month.
I have decided we're going to rename it to Surf Month, which is more specific and more accurate.
All right.
So that's very exciting because you did Blue Crush.
Blue Crush.
And then the episode coming out this Thursday is...
Point Break.
A little movie called Point Break, which we covered
very
for...
Nice.
I feel like, in a way, Keanu Club and this are kind of sister podcasts.
Oh,
like they're unrelated, but also directly related.
Mm-hmm.
That was another one we recorded live in person at my old apartment
with
Chris Podcasts. Very exciting. But yeah, every other Thursday, Wistful Thinking. Every Friday, we have Tom Club, Tom Cruise, Tom
Fridays
Hanks.
Are
alternating
for fun.
Those. Every Tuesday, we have a Too Fast, Too Forever, including every other Tuesday. Kara on for 3 more episodes. doing Furious 7, Fate of the Furious, and Hobbs and Shaw. But for all things Watch a Throne, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, watch@cageclub.me, I'm pretty sure. Come back next year for The Addams Family, for Furious 9, and maybe one or two others, who knows? And check out our other shows. As I said, go to cageclub.me/shows, poke around, almost 1,400 episodes in total. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Kara Gale Regan.
And we'll see you next time, whenever it is, on Watch the Throne.
White shirt, now red, my bloody nose sleeping. You're on your tippy toes creeping. Look.